Welcome, friends, to another edition of the Universe podcast, in which I will ramble, certainly, but kind of try and reflect somewhat. I'm thinking of a kind of highlights reel of sorts for the year, because it feels end of season tastic around us, and I've got time, and I am myself, yeah, looking back on what's been an extraordinary year, let's be honest, at every level. Cricket 2019, crazy, wonderful, dramatic, pretty extraordinary, I think. But what I propose to do is just kind of, as I say, ease my way through my blogs, just to prompt me as much as anything else. So this would mean, I think, in going in reverse order. So let's start with a brief prompt from January of this year. It's actually the second blog that I wrote this year. There was one that was about community coaching before that, but I remember fairly vividly lounging on my settee and watching the WBBL final. So coming from darkest Oz, January the 26th, and this kind of prompts me in the direction of certain conversations. So let's go with this. First paragraph is, let's start with this. My conviction that the dashingly, upliftingly positive upward trend in women's cricket, women and girls cricket in fact, is probably the most exciting and profound development in sport right now, bar none. From grassroots to the elite levels, things are getting better, and that fabulous, liberating wave will continue all over. I'm glad I wrote that, actually, because I think I certainly did believe it at the time. I still believe it, and more broadly, I do genuinely believe that it's more than slightly wonderful that women's sport, women and girls' sport, we could extend that across there because of stuff like the Women's Football World Cup, the coverage, the quality of the sport, etc., etc. I think that's hugely positive. And yes, I know I am a deeply flawed middle-aged geezer, and plenty of people will call me out for things that I say about women's sport, etc., etc., because I'm a clown like the rest of us blokes. I will get things wrong. However, I genuinely think it's more than slightly magic that there is a huge, huge positive upward curve going on for women's sport generally, and women's cricket is my bag. I really enjoy it. I spent more time, I'm pausing to reflect, but I think that's true. I think I did spend more time watching women's cricket again this year than blokes. Don't regret that at all. So yeah, my bloggist year started with the WBBL final. Just really briefly noting, 5,368 fans there, blah, blah, blah. Now, which, looking back, actually feels a bit light, actually. I mean, I've got that written down. I assume it was right. Doesn't entirely reflect the BBL in its pomp. However, great start to the year in many, many ways. I'm moving on. Obviously, I didn't attend it. I'm going to talk, I think, more about things that I actually attended. I do get fairly early to another highlight of my year, and this is personal. And again, it was something that I wrote about in March 23rd, a blog called How Much Can It Mean? This very much with my community cricket head on, went into a particular school. I'm sketchy details and you'll understand why. And a particular young fella, bless his cotton socks, ran over to me and actually gave me a hug. And I get entirely that we have to be very careful about those things as coaches. It was pretty much impossible to stop the fella. I recognised him, he recognised me, and he said, and I'm pretty much going to quote, I've been waiting for you to come back. And the way he said it and what it meant was actually really pretty profound. Go read it if you can bear it. How Much Can It Mean? March 23rd of this year. Just, yeah, one of those moments that's really, it's a highlight of my year. It is a highlight of my year, and that is personal, and that's, forgive me, it's probably kind of indulged, but I am going on about it, I think, I hope. because I reckon plenty of people who coach, you know, men, women, boys, girls, whatever level, they will kind of get that moments like that do flag up how wonderful sport is. It's not about me, it's about the sport offering that gift of, or that entry into something magic and bouncy and upful. And that was a magic moment for me. Okay, onward. I did, after that, I think the next one actually, as you can probably hear, I am just sliding through this. I wrote something for ECB Coaching Insight. I'm not going to go on about that, actually. It was a kind of slightly academic thing about player-centered coaching. Hope people found it interesting. Because I coach and I out myself regularly, I hope, because I do not want to come across as some kind of high-level expert. I ain't. I'm just a geezer who loves his cricket, loves his sport, have a certain level of training, work in the game, so okay. The level of training I have and have received and mentoring, etc., hopefully means I've got some kind of meaningful handle on what is good and bad and whatever in terms of coaching. However, I'm totally aware that all of us who coach at whatever level, most of us tend to be very strongly opinionated people. Anybody else got that? Notice that? That's the kind of way I feel about it. It's quite a macho game, isn't it? Men or women doing this coaching thing in sport, very often it's quite spiky in terms of people disagreeing, in terms of people watching over you. Friends, anybody identify with this thing? Most occasions that I am coaching, I'm kind of aware that there are other coaches around. I am kind of aware, certainly aware, that very often they are much finer cricket people than me, much better coaches and all that. I kind of quite like the tension around that, actually, because I don't think I do mind making a clown of myself. I like to just make a contribution, do the things that come natural in terms of the coaching. And in short, to refer back to that particular blog, surely one of the central things is this idea of really looking, involving yourself with the humans around you. Very often that, with me, in my case, that's small humans, trying to read them, what they want, what they're getting out of this, and recalibrate all the time what you're offering, because, you know, in my case, children, very often the children that I am coaching do not need technical stuff. They just do not need it. They're not interested. It's too early, or it's inappropriate, or it's unnecessary at that moment. Therefore, I have to be really player-centered. I hope to be player-centered. I hope to be understanding what they want and need, what's going to make them smile, what's going to make them want to stay in the game. That's what this thing was about. So onward, because I want to get to the games that I attended. First game, I think, in the season that I attended was England men, Pakistan, a warm-up game in Cardiff. Enjoyed it. Really good day out, actually. Cardiff, as people will know, tend not to be outstandingly well supported. It was pretty decently supported on that day. It was quite early in the season, May the 5th. And England were good. England were good. I'm going to move on. Go and have a look if you're interested in that one in particular. It wasn't one of the highlights of my year, and to be absolutely blunt, but it was good, an enjoyable day of international cricket. If we get into June is where it all kind of kicks off. Initially, Cricket World Cup squad announcements. I can remember writing about that. Then for me, the one that is this sacrilege saying this? I went to see India, Bangladesh in Cardiff, enjoyed that more than the England game, almost certainly, as much as anything, because it was a fantastic experience for me, just flukily, and I was just sat in the crowd on this occasion, secreted away in the media centre. I was in the crowd, I was sat there, I got there early, as I do, to chill and get the vibe or whatever, and within 5 minutes, the arch top geezers of the Barrett Army, who I met now and had a really good day with, kind of came sat next to me, literally within 3 feet. You may have seen, if anybody follows the blog or the Twitter handle, the Twitter stuff, I put up one or two pretty good pics, I thought, of there's a particular individual who carries around the flag and is made up like, it's magic. Again, not going to try and describe it. Go see, go look, or try and remember. I hope people have seen him around. He's absolutely one of their icons. He is an icon of Indian cricket, this guy. And he sat 2'6" away from me, waved his flag all day and blew his conch. And I talked to and met some of the guys who actually run, organise the Barrett Army, who were lovely guys. So, oi oi to them. In terms of the cricket, good day. Great to see some of the, you know, huge names of world cricket, in particular on the Indian side, in front of me. From memory, they didn't disappoint, but they didn't. They were good, but neither Kohli nor Dhoni particularly had a... It wasn't a stonking, it wasn't an earth-shattering kind of a day. It was just lovely, interesting, and a lot of fun, actually, being in the middle of the Barrett Army. And also, just this thing on trying to get a sense of who watches now and what the nature of this group or this nation even is, and all. And I get that that's all very dangerous stuff, but all I mean by that is the crowd, who goes to watch, who supports. Kind of interesting, because it felt like there were more women and families amongst the Indian fans who are, and most of you will know this, anybody who's been to an international where India are playing, where they're involved, they're just magic. The fans are wonderful. The level of support is fabulous. But it felt, and this is just, it's a very poor straw poll, this one, but it did feel like there were, you know, goodish numbers of grannies and small boys and girls and everybody. It felt like a family kind of venture. And that was a highlight. That was a highlight. It was just really lovely. I nearly used the word colourful there, which is probably a no-no, and I don't mean it in any kind of non-PC kind of way. It was that kind of a day in a deeply, deeply, richly enjoyable way. Onward, because we're getting towards the big deals for me this year. Friends, really have been, well, yeah. And is this crazy? I was going to say women's cricket, but they have, as much as England blokes, incidentally, won the World Cup, for God's sakes. I didn't go, I wasn't there, I followed it and I wrote about it and was absolutely gobsmacked by it, of course. Ridiculous drama of an obscene level, a wonderful level. But it's easier, as an accredited bloke, which is what I am. I've got ECB accreditation, which I'm hugely privileged to have as a writer of ill repute. But bluntly, again, because less people apply to the women's international than the men's, it's easier for nobodies like me to get in. And so that is one reason, to be frank, that I go to the women's. The other reason is I really genuinely like the vibe around it. There are some good people who follow the game. And the cricket is really entertaining. And returning to my first paragraph, getting better and better and better all the time. So the entertainment is getting better and better and better. For me, it really is. So anyway, the first women's international. I went to Worcester. I'm based, most of you will know, far, far west in West Wales, which I love deeply, been here most of my life. So the gettable places, the places that I can justify travelling to, really, are your Worcesters, Taunton maybe, Bristol, Cardiff, obviously. So south, southwest. So I went to Worcester, been before, like it as a ground, went to Worcester to watch England women versus West Indies women. That one was rain affected big time. That one was interesting and it was enjoyable. But what, nobody's going to pretend that day was a classic. England were goodish, but the Windies, unfortunately, aren't competitive. We'll go into this a bit more vis-a-vis the Australians and England in a minute. There's a step change of a level between The Windies. Very recently, it would appear that they are looking like they might close out a bit, and that's good. But the Windies series, England women against the West Indies women, was, yeah, not as competitive as you would like, but still enjoyed some good cricket, enjoyed the venue again, the cathedral, all that kind of thing. I'm just looking at ridiculous, pealing of joyful bells, the whole repertoire. That's how my live review of the event started, because they were fantastic, beautiful. It's campanology, friends, isn't it? Campanology is the art of ringing bells, which kind of spookily, wonderfully, as the sunshine came out, welcomed us into that game. It was a good day. Enjoyed it. Small, interesting little ground stroke facilities for media people there, but quite wacky. Like it. Not a problem at all. Kind of sat out in the open a bit. In terms of the cricket, I'm not remembering anything staggeringly wonderful. On that basis, I'm going to go on. I did enjoy it. Go flying past that. So we're into June, and I think that means, yeah, it does mean the Women's World Cup is on, not the footy is on. I really enjoyed that. I watched quite a lot of that. In the midst of that, I wrote something about it all, which again was supposed to be supportive of women's sport generally, because there was a lot of flack flying, as there is, from morons on Twitter in particular, about the alleged lack of quality of the Women's Football World Cup. Disagree passionately on that. I thought the striking thing was the quality. Don't compare it with the blokes. It's not the same. It's just move on from that. There was a lot of fabulous, intelligent, composed football, I thought, in that World Cup. But somehow there is a mention of Fran Wilson in my blog, and I think it's to do with, yeah, just a sort of general what a time to be alive kind of thing, in that Fran Wilson during this period pulled out one of the great catches in, I was going to say cricket history, okay, that's hyperbole, that's so OTT, but she made a catch that I thought said a lot about the now of this thing, the now of this magic step forward for women's sport. And fortunately, the immediacy of social media and stuff worked in the favour of that wonderful moment. So I wrote about it. Okay, we're getting into the big deals for me. The big deals were the Women's Ashes, of course, the men's World Cup. Okay, I did write severally about that, probably initially about my memory of the men's stuff. Let's go with that for a minute. Okay, let's try and stay with this. I wrote about stuff like selection, coaching for England, because I was fascinated and wound up some of the time, and then joyful, absolutely. I wanted England to do well, but spent a lot of time thinking and writing about Jason Roy this year, as an example. Unquestionably, relatively a test flop, and that was relatively predictable, you would say. But let's, rewind quickly, because he also heroically, and it was kind of heroic, came back from injury spookily quickly and hauled us to the World Cup final, didn't he? I mean, it wasn't just about him, but he did do that thing, and there was something about his brilliance in that format, and that's clearly the key, which was pretty, pretty central to the England Owen Morgan positivity thing, and therefore, yeah, his return into an England shirt was massive. Kind of wrote about that, probably unfairly, wrote more about the fact that he was inserted into the test team, which always seemed a real risk. At the very least, a crazy risk. But one could understand it, let's put it that way. The guy is incredibly talented, really special, maybe thinks he's really special, which is a slight concern, but in one sense, you could understand Bayliss or anybody else saying, okay, you know what, we'll get this guy in here because Bayliss clearly likes a sort of a positivity vibe. I wouldn't have done it myself, but what right have I got to say that? Only the right of a fan. You could see from 8 miles away there were technical issues about his batting or the potential for him getting exposed. Unless somebody said to him, Jason Bach, we think you're magic, mate. You're a wonderful player. We're going to put you in the test team. We're going to put you in there because we can see what you can do. However, we don't just want you to do that. We want you to stay in there, give yourself some kind of opportunity. It's test cricket, mate. It's manifestly a test over time. Therefore, we're going to apply a bit of smart cricket here. Do you get what we mean, mate? And he would probably say, yeah, I think I get it. And off he goes. I'm slightly more than slightly fascinated to know what level of conversations took place between him and Bayliss and batting coach, stroke coaches, Thorpey at that time. Well, still there. What was said, because, and this isn't just about Roy, plainly that, I'm going to call it a deficiency. Surely it's a deficiency, not just him, Bairstow, Butler in a way, maybe. There was a lot of pretty dumb cricket when smart cricket was needed. That I think that's a fair criticism. And it, yeah, I accept it's a criticism. But England test batting against Australia, who on the one hand are a goodish side, goodish, some great bowlers, yeah. But are they a great Australian side? No, they're not. Plainly, they're not. So it's not like we were playing absolute world beaters at their peak. We were playing a good test side who did bowl well in conditions that were helpful to bowlers. Get all that. But we did not surely apply ourselves with the intelligence that is necessary at test level. That, I think, is a fair cop. And I wrote about that angrily some of the time. Out of that, hopefully, because I care about it and I love the game and I want England and Wales to do well. And I've got a right to an opinion, even if, you know, plenty of people think, what a load of cobblers from some idiot in Wales who doesn't know anything about anything. Wrote about it. Stand by it, actually. Go trawl through and see what I said. And by all means, come back to me and tell me, and I'm a complete donkey if you want. But I felt strongly about that, so I did write quite extensively about that, as you know, from the coaching point, the philosophical point around making that distinction. And let's not pretend there isn't one. You know, yes, we all want to be positive, get that. Coaches want to sound like that, and because of the macho stuff around it, very often need to sound positive, I reckon. I think that is a factor. I think there's a, you know, even at the top level, probably if you've got to justify yourself, and if you're in a room full of sweaty blokes, you ain't going to say too much that sounds a bit wussy, that doesn't sound positive enough or manly enough. I think that is a factor. Not the overriding one, quite possibly. But anyway, in short, all that. Big questions asked of England players, the batsmen in particular, and the coaches. Think it's probably right that Bayliss is gone because of the time span thing, the 5 year cycle thing, which I think there's some truth in that maybe. Think Thorpe is hugely fortunate to still be in post if that continues. Because, yeah, his job more than anybody to intervene. He probably did do loads of stuff. I'm sure, I'm not saying he didn't try and do his job, but didn't work. Didn't work enough, didn't work early enough. I get, even at my lowly level, that coaching is about handing over responsibility more than anything. It is about offering up really good questions to or of the batsman in particular in this case. However, given where England found themselves, there was the absolute full-on necessity to start saying and, you know, intervening. I think that's also within the coach's remit. It's not all about being hands-off and being player-centred. It is also about having a quiet word, actually, at times. Anyway, enough. Let's go on. Bit daft to scoot right through England men's season. That's okay. World Cup final. I wrote about it. It was just unbelievable. I think I'm going to leave it at that. Other people will say it better than I will do right now. I'm going to leave it. Other things, honestly, yeah. I'm going to go on to the finals days, plural, because actually I was one of the relatively few people who, as a media geezer, who went to both and really wanted to. It's the first time I've been to Hove for any cricket event, wanted to do that. It's a long haul for me, so a bit of a sort of kind of indulgence in a way. But I was just thinking about this just now. That might have been my favourite cricket day of the year, actually, the women's KSL finals day. Lots of things relevant on that. Hadn't been to Hove, lovely ground. Nice, lowish, kind of open, lovely light. You're close to the sea. It was a sensational day, which always helps. Nice kind of vibe about it. As so often, mildly disappointing in terms of the turnout. They might say it was full, but it didn't feel entirely full. Yet again, women's sport being slightly under-supported at every level. However, you know, moved on. Two games of cricket on women's KSL's finals day is different from the men's. The two matches, so, you know, it just feels a little bit less angsty and tiring, actually, for all concerned. It just feels like a nice lump of cricket, actually, is what I'm getting to, I think. I'm not saying that the men's has to go there, whatever. I don't want to compare. But we had two really excellent, entertaining games of cricket. The final game, very like the men's, was just absolutely stonking, absolutely outstanding, just crazy, dramatic, really good sporting contest. And weird but true, maybe it's a bit weird. One of the real pleasures of the whole year was seeing that, the level of vindication for Heather Knight on that day, actually. Don't know her, never met her. I'm aware of her because there's a Cardiff MCCU link here. I know Sparky O'Leary, the coach there. I've talked to him about that. So I was rooting for Sparky, who was involved on the coaching staff at Western Storm. And Heather Knight, who I'd seen, who's clearly a real kind of slightly old school, honourable captain of England, obviously, as well as Western Storm, who really does try to do and say the right thing and perform to a high degree of excellence. And she was hurt, I know, by the Ashes experience. We might talk briefly about that in a minute. So for her to come through that day, go back and watch it, people, if you can get it. Because, yes, of course, we're going to be talking about Stokes for the rest of our lives. But actually, Heather Knight on that day, what she did was pretty solid and magnificent. It really was. The innings that she played and the way the finale of that event was absolutely fabulous. It really, really was, and joyful a real proper celebration. So, therefore, hugely fitting end to that KSL era. We could talk about that. We won't. We'll go on to something else. We'll go back, actually, sorry, stupidly perhaps, to that, the Women's Ashes, because, again, that was one of the events that I really enjoyed. I think I was slightly less inclined to be critical than some of my colleagues in the old media. Around this, in brief, I think because, yes, on the one hand, England were a disappointment, really were a disappointment throughout the Women's Ashes series, and no avoiding that. They underachieved and or were bullied out of it in a positive kind of way. I mean, from the Australian side, they were outclassed in a way they shouldn't have been. However, contradiction number 8 zillion coming up, I think that's true. They shouldn't have been absolutely walloped out of sight. And yet, It's also true that Australia did not play to their absolute maximum. They didn't need to, possibly, but they didn't. They were really, really good, and sometimes they were just wonderful, and the inevitable superheroines from their side were magnificent. Again, go read back or go look back, because they are special. Some of those women are really, really fine, fine athletes and players, and they, in the current or contemporary parlance, they executed brilliantly very often. But actually, there was a sense, not just in the 4 days, because I had that privilege of going down to Taunton for the 4 days of the Women's Ashes. They weren't consistently brilliant, to be fair. Weather intervened on that, but they were strong. They looked strong in every way. The flak that I alluded to a minute or two ago was, if you remember, pretty much about, well, hang on a minute, England had to win that 4 day event, the test event of the Ashes, had to, and yet they didn't seem to be that raging positive. They seemed to be cautious ish or just not competent enough. There was a little bit of that, I'm afraid. But also, given that Australia were absolutely bossing it, and it you would have expected that it would have brought out that really kind of ruthless streak in them, and positive streak, which they probably do better than anybody, it didn't evolve into that kind of a finale where either side was absolutely racing for it. So there wasn't a kind of lung-bursting finish. It kind of petered out a little bit, and some people were, angry about that. And I get that, but I just slightly felt that in the real world down there, where they had intervened and where it wasn't an easy surface, it was an okay surface to bat, and where human nature and the tension around the Ashes and the angst around targets or whatever, and the information maybe, because there was a lot of information, there always is, coming into both squads. And I think Meg Lanning, quite tellingly, she gave quite an interesting interview right at the very end that I sat in on, where she kind of said, look, we had all the numbers coming to us about how many overs we were going to need on this surface against these batters to get to a win. And it just didn't really add up. So, I understood that. I think there was a kind of a withdrawal into safety slightly by the Australians. England, I say, couldn't quite get the momentum going in that direction to threaten, really, really threaten a win. However, still enjoyed it. Quite a lot of good cricket. Off the top of my head, usual suspects on the Australian side, outstanding. Eccleston, seen a fair amount live now, and on the one hand, not a great athlete, she's one of two or three actually on the England side whose fielding just wasn't up to it on the day. Danny Wyatt and people like that are an obvious exception. Wyatt is a magnificent athlete, but not in that team in the 50 overs and 20 overs scene. She is, there are other really, really good fielders in the England squads. But generally, that is an area that has to be worked on, and I know it was one of the concerns of the then coach, Mr. Robinson, who has since left. That will change and that will develop. That will be part of this whole push for better, more dynamic sport, actually, across the board. But in short, yeah, good day. Good event, despite those questions that arose, and there are still big questions, clearly, it's kind of philosophical, structural questions, actually, about how England cricket catches up with Australia. Long way behind at the moment. Be really interesting to see what really does develop. ECB are making lots of noises about increases in terms of resources and pro cricketers. All that sounds goodish, but there are concerns about that, yes. Finally, let's just talk briefly. The other day, and it was the other day, the men's final at Edgbaston, Edgbaston probably needs that tournament for life. It hosts it magnificently. It's crazy on every level, but in a really fabulous FA Cup kind of final, cup final kind of a way. Loud, brash, noisy, colourful, fancy dress. The crowd is in there big time. It's a long old haul. I wouldn't at my advanced age want to be drinking all day, but some people are doing it clearly. Some people I get wouldn't really enjoy that. I wouldn't want to be next to an absolutely paralytic posse, to be fair. And there is plenty of that, but the key on the day, again, the weather was absolutely spectacular for mid-September. The cricket was dramatic in lots of ways. I mean, on the one extreme, Outlaws threw it away. And that was kind of almost, how the hell did that happen, kind of styly at lunchtime, whenever it was. Lost track. There were three, as you remember, three games there. And then obviously as you're moving into the final, just crazy and truly phenomenal in lots of ways. The bowling, again, pitch took a lot of flack. I understand that. It was worn. But do you know what? Sitting there, and I was, fortunately, with a magnificent view straight down the pitch, watching the likes of Harmer bowl and Lawrence bowl, and the ball really turning, I thought that was great and exciting and a proper test, a slightly different test. You know, you don't, do we or do we? Do we want it? Every short format game to be dominated by the bat because the batter knows they really can swing through the line of the ball and wallop, it's gone. I don't personally think we do want that. There are times when it's absolutely awesome or inspiring, wonderful. This time it wasn't like that, and I think it was much better myself for it. Moeen, who doesn't spin the ball much, but he was a proper handful as a bowler, as were some of the quicker bowlers, obviously. But it became very much about Harmer's figures on the bowling front and then about his batting. You know, do you know what? Came in, I think from memory, he did it the first ball for four. And him and Bopara just saw it through. And it, but that doesn't do it justice. It was remarkable. It was massively entertaining. Now then, I've probably ranted on far too long. I'm going to stop. That's supposed to be just a kind of, some kind of sense of what it's felt like to be me this year. I know you lot will have much better stories. I'd like to hear them one way or another. Come back to me or write something or point me at something. Because it's rich, this stuff, isn't it? I love all the cricket stories around these events. Thank you for listening to mine. I will be back at some stage. And we'll speak soon. Cheers. All the best.